From Mimeo Field at Harry Grove Stadium, this is Unlocking the Keys with JJ My House Key.
Hey Keys fans, happy opening day here at Mimeo Field. I'm JJ Mahowski, your host of Unlocking the Keys podcast, and I am so excited to get the season started with all of you right here at home tonight. We're inside the radio booth at Mimeo Field, but let's take a look back at the last couple of days. The Frederick Keys were able to play the Trenton Thunder at Citizens Bank Park on Monday and Tuesday. Let's take a look at how that looked for the team. On Monday, the Trenton Thunder defeated the Frederick Keys by a score of 9-2. The Keys did drop both games of this two-game slate, so they come into opening day tonight at 0-2 overall. On Monday, the final score 9-2. On Tuesday, that final score was 6-5, both in favor of Trenton. On Monday, Trenton had 9 runs on 10 hits and 1 error in the game. Frederick scored 2 runs on 5 hits and had 2 errors in the game. The exciting part of Monday was that both the Frederick staff and Trenton front office were able to travel up to the game and check out the product on the field this season. On Tuesday, the stadium was a little more quiet. It was filled with just family and friends of the team, but Frederick made it a ball game. And they scored 3 runs in the second and 2 in the seventh, losing by a final score of 6-5. Frederick had 5 runs on 3 hits and an error. Trenton scored 6 runs on 7 hits and 2 errors in the game. The difference maker was the run that they scored in the seventh inning. But tonight, the Frederick Keys come back home for opening day, looking to get that first win of the season.
It was a great couple of days up there at Citizens Bank Park. Being a Phillies fan myself growing up, it was a dream to be able to call a couple of games there. So thank you so much to MLB Draft League and everyone who went into organizing that. It was an awesome experience. And we wish we could have shared it with the fans, but nonetheless, fans are welcome to attend Frederick Keys games at 100% starting tonight. First pitch scheduled for 6:30 right here at Mimeo Field as we take on the West Virginia Black Bears. To hear about the promotions coming up in this first block, let's head down to the field. We're going to go to the actual on-deck circle today with our director of marketing, Macy Hill, for the on-deck circle.
All right, Keys fans, here we are on the on-deck circle, and we're joined today by our director of marketing, Macy Hill. Macy, it's opening day. I'm so excited here at home at Mimeo Field. How are you feeling?
I don't even have the words. I mean, I'm so excited. I'm thrilled. I cannot believe the gates are opening in just a few hours. Quixote is getting ready to see everyone for the first time in over a year. Music is going to be blaring from our stereos. We cannot be more excited.
It's been 633 days since the Keys played a game in this stadium. So Macy, what can fans look forward to if they come out to the ballpark in our first couple of homestands here?
Just like, you know, everything that they're used to, our regular stuff, our fun zone is open. We have our concession stands are ready to go. But as far as promotions go, tonight and tomorrow night, there's going to be a magnet schedule giveaway presented by Precision Heating and Cooling. That magnet is awesome. I have one at my desk. I have one on my fridge. They're going to be great. So definitely come out and grab one of those. And then later on in the homestand, we have our Pirates in the Park for the first time at Mimeo Field. That's going to be a lot of fun. Quixote has his eye patch ready to go. Then we have our mystery ball that giveaway. Well, it's not a giveaway. We have a bobblehead giveaway that same day. So that's going to be a mystery bobblehead giveaway. But then we have a mystery ball auction. And that's going to be for Keys Care, benefiting Keys Care here for our Frederick Keys. And then later, we also have a luau for the first time. And that's going to be really fun. Some Lays might be given out. You'll have to come and check out the kind of promotions that we're going to have going along with that event.
Well, we're definitely looking forward to all of that coming up this season. Don't forget, Keys fans, if you want to get your tickets, visit frederickkeys.com or give the box office a call. Opening day is just 6 hours away right here at Mimeo Field, so be sure to come out to the field. We're really looking forward to it. For the rest of the on-deck circle, let's head back up to the radio booth.
Well, that was a lot of fun, Macy. Thanks for joining me down on the field. We'll get to another interview in just a second. Today, we have senior prospect analyst from Prep Baseball Report, Mike Rosenbaum, joining us on the show as our main guest. He's going to talk to you about some of the players that are going to be standouts this year at Frederick. But before that, let's talk about people who are standing out at the major league level. Our Frederick Keys alumni of the day. Mike Yastrzemski is our alumni of the day. He played here in 2014, batting .312 with 12 hits, 1 homer, 2 triples, 7 doubles, and 19 RBIs. He made his Major League debut on May 25th, 2019 for the San Francisco Giants. That game came against the Arizona Diamondbacks. Mike Yastrzemski is the grandson of Red Sox legend Carl Yastrzemski. Carl is a 1989 Hall of Famer, so
such a legend to have there in Major League Baseball. And obviously it's awesome to see a grandson of someone now playing in Major League Baseball. Mike Yastrzemski was actually drafted three times, once in 2009 by the Red Sox, again in 2012 by the Mariners, and finally in 2013 by the Orioles when he finally signed and then went through the system with the Orioles and eventually heading over to San Francisco where he now plays today. His 2021 stats through 33 games, he's batting .220 with 6 home runs, 11 RBIs, and a .319 OBP. But again, Keys fans, someone to look out for this season. We've had Yermin Mercedes, John Means, and now Mike Yastrzemski to look out for on the major league level. Hopefully we'll see a lot of players this summer make it up to the major league draft and hear their name called on draft day. All right, Keys fans, we now welcome in senior prospect analyst at Prep Baseball Report. Mike Rosenbaum joins us. Mike, how are you doing? 2 days into the season already, and so much prep work has gone into this. We're finally here.
Yeah, thanks for having me, JJ. It's good to be here. I'm a fan of Unlocking Keys, and this is cool, man. So season's underway. A lot of moving parts to get here. Rosters, making sure all the data and technology and tools for that have been in place, making sure everything is coordinated between the 6 draft league teams. As you can imagine, the baseball operation side of it has been a bit hectic leading up to it, but it's nice to see it finally start paying off and games being played. And, you know, a lot of these draft eligible players getting a chance to showcase, you know, what they got with the draft moved back a month now. It's a really unique opportunity for these players to get extra looks that they might not have had, especially coming off of a year in which most players had very few, if any, looks by scouts. So this league is big for that reason.
Well, we were able to see the team play at Citizens Bank Park on Monday and Tuesday. We shared that experience a little bit with our fans in the intro, but let's get into a little bit more about you. So you are the senior prospect analyst at Prep Baseball Report, obviously doing a lot of work and mainly with the draft league right now, but you have a decade of experience analyzing prospects and looking at what goes into who is playing on the baseball field. You've written for MLB.com, Bleacher Report, and Prep Baseball Report. So what is kind of your beginnings? I know you started at Prep Baseball Report and are now back. What's your story behind that?
Yeah, so my background is, so I attended Grinnell College, where I'm a little liberal arts school in the middle of nowhere, Iowa, played baseball there, got a great education, studied history, but got out of college and realized that, okay, I've dedicated my life to baseball, but I haven't really thought about what that could mean in terms of a career. So kind of started moving in that direction. And actually the first step was created just a simple, silly blog with myself and a bunch of my former college teammates. We all kind of took to that pretty seriously. It grew over a year or two, called thegoldensombrero.com. And with that, I kind of just, you know, got noticed in the right way. I guess I was kind of doing some of the right things. And from there, it was got picked up by Prep Baseball Report Missouri, which I consider to be like my first paid job in baseball. And that was a lot of work at the state level, covering high school, the high school scene in Missouri, throughout Missouri. And in addition to that, just, you know, looking at it from a which players are draft prospects. So it's kind of that coverage of the high school team angle, and then also the individual player level. So I kind of got my my chops in terms of player evaluation, and you know, how to really write about players in a meaningful way at PBR Missouri. And from there, actually, I moved to the East Coast. My now wife and I had relocated to the East Coast when I was offered the Bleacher Report gig. And you know, to be honest, like, that was a jump compared to what I was doing. There was a lot of learning on the go and you know, trial and error, making mistakes, but you know, I wouldn't be in the position I am without it. So I spent about 3 years at Bleacher Report before joining the MLB.com team, and more specifically MLB Pipeline, where I've spent the last 5.5 years working with Jonathan Mayo, Jim Callis, you know, doing everything from minor league coverage, spring training coverage, Arizona Fall League coverage to, you know, ranking, like specifically I was in charge of ranking the top 30 prospects for 10 different organizations, you know, so that's a pretty significant undertaking. But, you know, what better way to become good at player evaluation and how you think about and how you talk about players than having to dive in and you know, sift through 70 players in a system, 70 viable players in a system to determine who the best 30 are, you know? So there's a lot of skills I learned doing that, and also a lot of connections I made in that process, which have really, you know, been great. You know, for example, one of the connections I made along the way, Sean Duncan, president of Prep Baseball Report, the first person to extend me a job offer or say like, hey, we'd be interested in working with you. And that was 10, 11 years ago. And then, you know, after I leave MLB, one of the first people to call me, Sean Duncan, you know, so it was really exciting to come back to Prep Baseball Report. It not only was a kind of a homecoming in a way, I just from a distance have really, really been a fan of what this company is doing from the state level, the player level, how they cover players, how they're implementing technology, and how they always just seem to be taking a step forward on not only just how they're covering players, but their presentation from a media perspective, the multimedia component, and seeing the growth there was something very appealing to me, and something that's been very enjoyable to be a part of, a challenge in a different way compared to what I was doing at MLB, which was very editorial, very writing focused, where this is involves a lot of creative planning, a lot of you know, foresight about what matters, what's going to work, but also being able to take some risks at that same time with in terms of content that I might not have had a chance to do at Bleacher Report at MLB.
So kind of just looking at you as a baseball player, how has that helped you to be able to evaluate talent, especially mentioning that you worked at Pipeline helping to create those top 30 lists?
Yeah. So, I mean, let's be clear. Like, I was a Division III baseball player. I wasn't playing against the best guys in the country. But that always prospects, young players had always like kind of piqued my interest from a young age. And honestly, I probably attribute that to baseball cards more than anything, or you know, being growing up in the early 90s and all the great players that were around then. Just, you know, years and years of experience, seeing good players come through, whether it was in high school or college, you know, just going to games. I think just having a feel for the game and understanding of the game, and, you know, playing at a relatively high level definitely has provided a lot of value in what I'm able to do from an evaluation perspective, from a written multimedia coverage perspective. It just, in addition to like helping me determine why a player is important, you know, like what makes this player important, it just gave me a chance to see and be around a lot of baseball. And in my opinion, like, there's no better tool for forming opinions and coming up with comparisons and, you know, comparing player A to compare player B than just seeing a lot of baseball and seeing what makes players good.
You mentioned the baseball cards. Is there one specific baseball card that you've collected that stands out as your favorite, or a favorite player that you're able to get their baseball card growing up?
I mean, Griffey. I was all about the Griffeys. I was about the Griffeys and the Michael Jordans. I was born in the northern suburbs of Illinois, so like just a little bit north of Chicago. So the Chicago Bulls were my childhood, and Michael Jordan was my childhood. I'm oddly a north side of Chicago White Sox fan, which is, you know, it's technically Cubs territory, but I grew up a White Sox fan. So, you know, my dudes on that team, Frank Thomas, Robin Ventura, were you know, must watch guys for me whenever we were watching.
Would you say, like, working at MLB, you could still be a White Sox fan and also still be able to evaluate talent? Was there, like, could you still have favorite players?
Yeah, oh, for sure. And you do, but you can't acknowledge them publicly. You know what I mean? It's you can't, you know, next thing you know, you're going to be like, oh, someone's going to be slapping East Coast bias on you, West Coast bias on you. And, you know, for me, it would be White Sox bias, which wasn't a thing with me, but that's something that you, like, you know, in the industry, you do want to avoid. You don't want to be viewed as somebody who's partial to one team or one region or anything like that.
So moving into the MLB discussion of things, obviously last year with the pandemic, there wasn't baseball until July. So there was a little bit of a lull in what to post on social media. You helped to get the Twitch account started up, and I understand you had a big part in helping to get the Players League going with MLB The Show and everything like that. Can you talk a little bit about that and what your connection was there with the Twitch account?
Sure. So I actually didn't have a part in getting the Players League going. That started getting going. And where I came in was you know, we weren't involved on the major league side at all. So when the minor league side, you know, there being absolutely no baseball in terms of minor leaguers, it's like, hey, okay, let's scale this really awesome, successful thing, the Players League, that, you know, everyone's in front of their computer, everyone's checking out. How do we almost like scale this down and apply it to minor leaguers? So ultimately, after, you know, building out some designs, it was, you know, I'm going to play a minor leaguer and I'm going to interview him. You know, when I pitched the idea, I kind of compared it to something like Hot Ones, where like you're doing an activity, but you're also having fun and asking questions. So that was kind of my model for it. And, you know, the first player I had on was Josiah Gray, who's a top ranked pitcher in the Dodgers organization. And it was a blast. You know, once the season got started, we didn't have as much time to do it. But you know, personally, like I saw what was happening. Like, hey, I like Twitch. I like playing this video game. I like talking, like whether it's to myself or to other players, you know, this is something that I can do. And, you know, it went really well. I wish I had done it more. It's something that I, you know, feel like I could still do just with players, you know, and, you know, maybe that's something that Prep Baseball Report ends up doing, but it's been very cool to see this year. You know, granted, I'm no longer with MLB, but to see their like social and gaming, you know, side start to pop a little bit and a lot of cool things start to happen there. So, you know, it's cool to say I had a little part in that, you know.
Did you do well when you were talking to players? Did you try to win at all? What was your record?
I think we only did it three times and I was 0-3 and they were like, I know. and they were just like 6-2, 7-2 losses, you know, like nothing fun. Probably not great from a content perspective. It's like, hey, you know, some timely hitting and good pitching. Cool. And you know, when everyone's like, hey, I would rather see a 15-14 game where like every swing's a home run. But it was fun. You know, it got creative. With Josiah, we took a minute and we would like utilize our 2-minute pauses. And I went over like pitch scripts with him. He was, you know, up here with a baseball showing in front of the camera to everybody. So we just had some fun with it and you know, basically on the fly in real time, explored some different ways to best utilize that emerging and popping medium, you know.
Would you consider yourself, like, do you play the game in your free time now? Are you any good?
I mean, when I have free time, I like to. I always blow with pitching. I can hit, I can swing it. And then I come undone. I would say I'm incredibly average at the game, but that doesn't stop me from having fun or risking looking bad publicly. You know, like I was never concerned about like losing when I did those things. It's like, hey, like these guys are really good. These guys play all the time. They might schlack me. Like this might be a run rule scenario where we're going to have to figure out what to do with the remaining time because I got run ruled in like 5 innings. But luckily that didn't happen. So I was kind of thankful for that in a way that we didn't have to address that scenario when we came to it. But yeah, no, I play in my free time. Love video games. It's just, you know, with the draft league now underway, there's not too much free time.
Are you more Xbox or PS4?
PS4. PS4. And then also a little bit of PC too. Yeah. I haven't upgraded yet, man. Unfortunately, I've not upgraded yet.
So moving on from the MLB side of things, you came back to PBR and you mentioned earlier that you were able to draw your contacts from the past and be able to come back to PBR and now work for the draft league. What was the process like to come back and be able to start with the draft league and now work up to opening day and everything?
Yeah. So the planning was already underway. I joined the PBR team, rejoined the PBR team on April 1st. So the draft league had been announced as a thing, I think the previous fall. Some more details were released around January or February. So when I came in, the operation was already, you know, underway. I was learning on the fly and just not, I don't want this to sound bad, but like thrown into the fire to deal with things, but in a very challenging and rewarding way, learning a lot about how baseball operations department works. You know, the conversation to come back was, hey, you know, we've seen what you've been doing. You've made a name for yourself, especially as, you know, I've had a relationship. I've known these people going back like 10 years. So like similarly, like I've been keeping tabs that, like, when I saw prep baseball report, Major League Baseball were aligning to form the draft league, I'm like, hey, like, that's cool. What a cool place for prep baseball report to get to, where they're now aligned with Major League Baseball doing that. So to be brought in ahead of the draft league in the same way that I was just talking about, like, how unique and cool it's been to say that, like, I helped MLB get these, you know, the streaming and the gaming going. You know, when this league is done, I'm going to look back at it and be like, hey, it's cool knowing that I had a hand in helping craft this league, you know, from rosters to the coverage.
You've mainly worked as helping out with analyzing prospects and that sort of thing, but have you found yourself wearing different hats as the season has gotten underway and building up to it? Like, seeing you help to manage rosters, or maybe you step into a meeting and, hey, let's talk about trainers and this kind of stuff, stuff that you haven't done in the past and in only analyzing.
Yeah. And, you know, it would seem like that might be out of my comfort zone just because of what I was previously doing, but it's been a lot of fun. Apparently I enjoy wearing multiple hats, or I didn't realize that I wanted to be wearing multiple hats, you know, in previous years. So to have the chance to do that and be involved and be able to work with a lot of really smart people, and a lot of really informed and in tune people with the college baseball scene and the high school baseball scene has been, you know, in itself a learning experience, just because I feel like I'm getting so much info from them about, you know, how they view players, how they view baseball operations, how you know, how they think this league should work. So it's been a challenge once again, but honestly, maybe my favorite career challenge to date, if I'm being honest. Yeah.
So it's opening night here at Nimmo Field, and we've worked over the last couple of months to make sure that the league has gotten started. We're two games in already. The Frederick Keys will open up here at Nimmo Field tonight. What are some players, or who are some players rather, that fans should know about before they come into this gates tonight for opening night?
Sure. So I'm going to hit you with a couple pitchers for fans to keep an eye on. The first one is a right-handed pitcher out of John Logan Junior College. His name is Francois Castillo, a right-hander, 6'1", 225. Throws hard. You know, he brings it on the mound. Fastball, it's up to 96. Really good life. He's got a sharp slider in the low to mid 80s with a high spin rate and even higher spin rate on his curveball. And a pretty good low spin changeup too. So, like, when we're talking about, like, the rosters and looking at these guys, you know, the traits that I'm just talking about are all the types of thing that pro scouts are looking for. It's like, hey, this guy throws 96. This guy can spin the crap out of his breaking ball. This guy has a changeup to boot. You know, like, those are all really important qualities. So he's one name I would really key in on and look out for. Another strikeout artist, hard thrower, is Luis Guerrero. He's from Chipola College in Florida. Among the JUCO leaders in strikeouts this year, it's another guy who's got a fastball 93 to 96, sharp curveball, solid. Actually, you're gonna like this. I would encourage people to look at this. It's he has a ridiculous splitter. He's got a really good splitter. It's kind of like a split change. It just bottoms out. It's a really nasty pitch. And he can bring it on the mound too. He's kind of got that high leg kick, active, fun delivery, you know, so he's having fun out there. And one last pitcher, keeping with this junior college theme I unintentionally went with here, is Peyton Zabel. He's Iowa Western Community College, and he's headed to Louisiana Lafayette next year. 6'7", 240, fastball, can reach the mid 90s. Another guy with a good spin on his curveball. Just very, like, projectable player. And you're going to see that there's this, obviously the college season is still, you know, we're 2 days into the season. The college season for most guys is still going on. So at the front end of this league, you're going to see more JUCO Division I, Division II guys. But, you know, that may just be like, hey, these guys are fillers. The kicker is, like, these are some of the best JUCO Division II and Division III players in the country. You know, like, there's Division II strikeout leaders in the league. There's Division II home run leaders in the league. Just all sorts of very interesting talents who might not get a chance to perform against Division I hitters, or you know, like, it's a very interesting mix. There's some really great high school players in the league, one of whom is on the Keys. His name is Renee Lastris. He's from Calvary Christian. He is the top ranked prep catcher in the state of Florida at the moment. He's going to be a Florida Gator next year if he doesn't turn pro. And it's just, you know, it's what a big league catcher should look like. 6'3", 200 pounds, physically strong, big pull side power, strong arm behind the plate, quick pop times, just a really solid guy who's, you know, he's going to look at home against college guys out there. And you know, the kicker is that it's Calvary Christian. Like he's been the receiver. He's caught some of the best prep pitchers in the country, you know? So this guy is he's a high profile guy for sure. And then one other hitter to keep an eye on for fans. If you like big power, you're going to love Anthony Heron Jr., another John Logan Jr. College guy. He finished the season with, I think, 17 home runs, 17 home runs, batted about 400. Big right-handed power, physical guy, 6'2", 6'3", 240-ish. He's got some pops. You know, he ranked among the JUCO league leaders this year for most of the year in batting average, home runs, total bases. You know, like he can do some damage at the plate. And you know, there's going to be a lot of those guys in this league this year too. Guys who may get overlooked because they're viewed as more power than hit, but they actually hit pretty well. So you're gonna get a good blend of you know, tooled up tooled up performers, not just performers, not just tooled up guys. Like everybody's coming to this league is coming to the league for a reason.
So you mentioned the spin rate, especially for the pitchers, but looking at the analytics of some of the other things, I mean, you have bat speed and exit velo and all of those sorts of things that go into the game. Now, as a prospect analyst, and if you were to ever become an MLB scout, do you feel like you would look at the actual stats of a player, his home runs, his average, that sort of thing? Or are you more driven by the analytics side of things when evaluating talent?
I'm more driven by the analytics side. I don't discount the stats, but I think the stats need to be framed in the proper context. If a guy is just hitting a ton of home runs, my question is like, it has less to do with how can this guy hit so many home runs? It's going to be looking at the competition, you know, seeing if there's any caveats to the performance, you know, and then compare that with the TrackMan data. You know, the TrackMan data will tell you that, hey, he hits the ball hard. He hits the ball far. He hits these pitch types. He hits these he can hit in these locations. You know, I think it just takes it to a next level that I really appreciate. And like going back to it, like I feel like video games have started to build that into MLB The Show. You know, you see exit velocities, you see pitch stuff, you see zones like that. That's just kind of the future of the game. That's where we're heading, and embracing technology is part of baseball these days.
Well, you mentioned the future of the game, but the future is kind of here now. Does there become a point in your opinion that the analytics go away? And if a guy hits a ball hard, but is always hitting it to the same spot or is hitting for a low average, do you think their prospect value eventually goes down once they hit a certain level, maybe double A, triple A, when they're on the cusp of making major league?
Yeah, no, that's a really good question. I think that there is probably some truth to that the analytics provide value up into a certain point. At a certain point, the analytics need to translate to on-field performance in the same way that when a player enters a major league team, you know, a minor league system, it's how do we turn all of that talent into performance and progression? So, you know, I don't know if I have a direct answer for that other than I think it becomes less valuable at a certain point, but on a case by case basis. I think it needs to be, I don't think there's a blanket statement you could give for that.
Well, the MLB Draft League is all centered around the MLB draft. So last question for you heading into July, and obviously this could change a lot until then, but do you have a player in mind who is going to go number one overall or someone from the draft league that might go really high?
Ooh, good question. You know, a lot of that depends on how many of these really good D1 players are like, I can't reveal who are in contact with, but you know, once teams start being eliminated from the NCAA tournament, you're going to see a lot more high profile, you know, top 3 round types instead of like top 10 round types, you know. I don't know. The next time you have me on, when I come back from my second Keys appearance here,
yeah,
before the draft,
mm-hmm.
I'm going to give you a full slate of picks. How about that? I'm going to give you my pref list for draft leaguers.
All right, we're looking forward to it. We'll make sure to hit that in late June then.
Oh my God, what a safe answer! What a safe answer, right? Oh.
Well, thank you so much for joining us. I really appreciate you taking your time, and hopefully we'll see you at some point down here in Frederick. Our fans maybe can catch you on the radio. If you stop in for a game, I'll have you on for an inning or two here in Nimmo Field.
Consider it done. It's a date.
Looking forward to it. Thanks for joining us, Mike.
Thank you, JJ.
Well, Keith fans, there you have it. Mike Rosenbaum, senior prospect analysis from Prep Baseball Report. You heard a couple of names to look out for to start this season out here in Frederick. We're so excited to have you right back here at Nimmo Field. Again, single game tickets are still available if you want to get them over the next few hours. 6:30 first pitch scheduled here against the West Virginia Black Bears. And if you want to listen to the game on the radio, I'll be broadcasting all 68 Frederick Keys games this season, home or away. You can tune in on the TuneIn app by searching Frederick Keys, or you can tune in to frederickkeys.com and go to the Listen Live tab where you can find the game broadcast there as well. That'll do it for this edition of Unlocking the Keys. We are looking forward to getting our season started, and we will see you very soon, fans. Until next time, I'm JJ Mihalski. Happy opening day.